This is FM 100.5 and 101.9. AM 1450, Rutherford County's place to talk. WGNS, Murfreesboro, your good neighbor station. This is The Truman Show with Truman Jones. A look at the politics, news, sports, and people that are shaping Rutherford County. Now your host, Truman Jones.
Good morning, Rutherford County. It's a little cold out there this morning. We have one of the greatest athletes that ever came out of the state of Tennessee and was successful on all levels. And, of course, I'm talking about Mr. Robert James this morning. And, Robert, I am so glad to have you on the radio this morning.
Well, Mr. Jones, I appreciate the opportunity.
Now, don't call me Mr. Jones. We're about the same age. I'm a little bit older than you.
A little older, okay. But, Truman, I appreciate the opportunity to come on this show.
And you just to take your time off this morning is really special. And you, your story is one of the better stories to come out of Murfreesboro. We've had so many famous people, athletes, all walks of life. But you're one of these people that really, really stood out. And I remember hearing about you a lot of times as I got older and I was hearing about some of your exploits over at Holloway. And that was a different time. And oh, before I forget it, one of your big buddies, Mr. Ron Washington, told me to tell you hi and to tell you that you were the second best runner that came from this area. And I don't really know what he's coming from. You probably know better than I do.
I will yield to him. He was,
no,
he was a pretty good high school athlete. Yes.
and you were at a different time. I mean, we all remember those days, those of us that are old enough. And it was during the time of segregation. And a lot of the great athletes of those periods, unfortunately, they didn't get the recognition. They weren't seen. They didn't interact in the field of battle on the football field or things like that. And it was something that was a lot of people don't even understand anymore why those things happened and what was going on. But you guys, how was it when you were going to Holloway and some of your best athletes that you had on the football field? Because a lot of them, as we were talking earlier, went unnoticed, unfortunately.
Yes, they did, simply because they did not get the exposure that young athletes today get. Kids today really, they don't fall through the cracks. Colleges, they have a good scouting system to make sure that they recruit the best athletes. And the high school programs today, the kids get excellent exposure. So it's quite hard for a good athlete to fall through the cracks. But back then, considering that you had two different systems, you had a system, with segregation splitting the system, a white system and a black system. And I really don't know if either system was getting a lot of exposure because they just didn't have real good means of recruiting, good means of scouting. Everything was mainly done, you could say, just by observation, in way of, you could say, technology of kids having a lot of film to look at on kids. It just wasn't there. So, you know, the system wasn't quite as advanced, but growing up in a segregated system, it really made it hard for some kids to get recognized. But when they did, they was limited because of the fact they was not able to go to the white schools. And that seemed kind of odd this day because you talk to young people and it's hard for them to imagine where there was two systems that existed. But it was two systems that did exist. And if a black athlete, if he was an exceptional athlete, it was hard for him to go to a school and play sports because your black schools, and I'm making reference to your universities, they had to pick of the crop. You know, they picked the best athlete, the excellent, the top, the cream of the crop. And if you didn't fall within that rank there, and if you just was just on the scale of an A to B, if you was a B athlete, you could very easily get overlooked. And that's what happened to a lot of good athletes back then.
And a lot of people think back, Tennessee State University, and you're talking about Grambling and some of the schools out of Texas. They were almost like pro teams back then. They really were.
They was. You know, I mean, they were exceptional teams. Probably had some of the best programs in the country. But once again, you still had two systems at that level. Your predominant black schools did not play you against the white schools. So they really didn't get the recognition that they deserved. The school systems really didn't integrate until the late 60s, mm-hmm. you know, and the early 70s, integration was fully implemented at that time. But in the late 60s, in the mid 60s, you know, they were still separated. And Tennessee State had one of the greatest football programs in the nation.
They really did.
And really just did not get the recognition. FAMU had one of the greatest football team. Grambling turned out more professional football players than any school in the nation, even Ohio State.
Right.
But those schools just was not getting the recognition that they deserve simply because they didn't get the exposure.
Now, you went to Fisk, which I find that interesting, because you were at the top of the athletes to ever come out of this area. And everybody that saw you said you were just unbelievable. And you were one of these people who had that tremendous work ethic. And you were always striving for success. Of course, Fisk was a great school back then.
Mm-hmm.
But you were known a lot, I guess, as much for your speed as anything, because you were one of the fastest athletes to ever come out of here.
Yes. That was discovered later, mm-hmm. Simply because in high school I played in the line. We had so many good athletes at Holloway, so many guys that had excellent speed. So he could sacrifice me and put me in the line, and I played in the line. And I even played in the line when I was in college. But because of my the speed that I had, I also ran track, and I ended up running track with Fisk, and I held the college state record here in Tennessee for several years. That's college, not university. And because of that speed, it really helped me get to the next level. We had some pro scouts to come through, and what they was mainly concerned about was your speed. And they timed me, and they felt like I had exceptional speed. I didn't realize I had exceptional speed until they told me I did it.
You're just wondering why nobody could catch you, right?
No, I've never really had to run, because in college I played, I ran on the track, but in college, you know, playing linebacker and defensive end and playing in the line, I never really had to use that speed. So I really kind of, the crossover I made from a lineman to a cornerback was really to extreme. You know, you don't go from playing in the line to playing in the NFL and playing and being a cornerback one-on-one, mm-hmm. covering the fastest receivers in the nation. So it was kind of a very unusual turnaround that I made there.
You know, everybody at some time or another thinks, you know, maybe I should have been born before, or maybe after, in a different time. Mm-hmm. And in this day where athletes just, the moon is not far enough for them. Mm-hmm. When we're talking about benefits and salaries, mm-hmm. and things like that, and mm-hmm. the notoriety. But I found it interesting when you and I were talking earlier that the scouts came over and talked to you, and you had three of the biggest teams going back in the NFL back then,
mm-hmm.
but you had no go-between, no agent, none of that. It's hard for anybody to imagine, and it's going up in today's time, what was going on back then with you, because if you were a young Robert James right now and they were talking to you, you would have somebody negotiating for you. The sky's the limit for somebody that had all your talent.
Well, you know, in this day and age, if I was playing in this day and age, I'd probably be looking at maybe a $40-50 million contract.
Right.
But when I started playing, this was at the early stage of the birthing of the NFL. Salaries was extremely low. I didn't need anyone to negotiate a contract for me, because they really wasn't paying that kind of amount of money. My first contract, and a lot of people wouldn't believe this, in 1969 is when I went to the Buffalo Bill, and I went as a free agent. My first contract, it was a $12,000 contract.
Wow.
And I think it was like a $2,500 bonus if I made the football team. So I kind of made like $15,000 my first year. But that was about twice as much as teachers was getting paid. Teachers was getting paid probably about $8,000 a year. So, you know, it was enough money to live off of. But
I think that span is wide between the teachers.
Oh, yes, yes. I tell you, it's unbelievable.
You know.
It's unbelievable what these guys get now. The money these guys get now, if it's used properly and if they make very wise decisions and have people around them that they can really trust, you know, not only will they be wealthy, but their offsprings and their descendants also will be wealthy. So, you know, it's a blessing to have that talent. It's just that one thing about it, football is a short life expectancy. It's not like an occupation where you can go and be a banker and you're going to be a banker even when you're 60 years old. If you're football players, you better, you know, take advantage of those years because the 1 year is worse than a dog year. You know, 1 year is 7 years in dog years, but really in football, maybe 1 year is like 10 years. So, you know, you can age pretty fast. And the average, when I was playing, the average, you could say life expectancy, not life expectancy, but the average time expectancy, a person may play that game probably something more like 3 years. So mm-hmm. It's not like that you get in it, you guarantee you're going to be there for 5 or 10 years.
We see athletes that came out of the 40s and the 50s and the 60s, and a lot of them are still carrying all of the old scars of playing football. But the memories have had Raymond Berry on, and I guess you've met Raymond Berry, one of the greatest wide receivers ever.
You know, I have not, and Raymond lived right here in Murfreesboro, and I feel so tempted to go out to his house and introduce myself to him. You know, I remember Raymond. Raymond was one of my favorite athletes, him and Johnny Unitas. The Baltimore Colts was my team, you know. Parker, Lenny Moore, all those guys, you know, I just loved them when I was in high school and in elementary school. And it's strange, you know, after going through college, you know, and making the Buffalo Bills team, I recall playing against Baltimore, and I was standing across the line looking at all those guys that I idolized. But Raymond wasn't there, but, you know, there's no question about it. He's one of the greatest wide receivers to have ever played the game. And not only that, I've heard some very positive things about him. He's a very humble person.
He is.
He's very, you could say, also a man with wisdom, too.
Talking to you two guys, you're a lot alike. You really are. And you both had tremendous work ethics, and you had the right frame of mind. Is it something, you could have all of the skills in the world, but if you don't hone those skills, and if you don't have the right mindset, a really logical mindset on what your goals are and what your accomplishments are mm-hmm. need to be, and you stay within the structure that has to be, you can almost do anything you want to,
yeah.
And you guys are really examples of that.
I think a lot of times, you know, people may have problems relating to this, but strength comes through humility in a lot of cases, and I think you have to have a lot of self-confidence with that humility. But one of the most important things in life is that you have to know where your source of strength come from. And I've always realized and I've always known where my source of strength come from. It comes from my faith, you know, in the Lord. I mean, it's a gift that God has given, at least gift that he gave me, and it's a gift that I know that he's given all great athletes. And when you can acknowledge that, and when you also have a desire to want to, you could say, perfect that gift. Just because God has given you that gift, it doesn't mean that it's been perfected. And it takes a lot of hard work, dedication, and commitment. And this is something, you know, you realize at an early stage in your life that you have a gift. I didn't realize that I had this gift once I got to pro ball, when I got to Fisk University, when I got to high school. But I realized that, you know, athletic-wise, that I was blessed with talent. But it takes years to cultivate it and to try to perfect it. And it takes commitment, sacrifice. It takes, you know, patience. It takes help from other people too. But when you know that it's there, it's something that you want to try to really have it to blossom within you and try to utilize it as much as possible to the greatest degree and exploit it. Because that gift is only there for a season. That's the thing about having an athletic gift. It's not there for that way it can be utilized for a lifetime. It's there for a season. That's why it's so important that young athletes focus very heavily on their education, because at some point in time, you're going to definitely need to fall back on it. And even when you, if you can go to the next level of playing professional sports, you still need to have your education, because you need to have the knowledge, the wisdom, to know how to use the resources that God has blessed you with. And even when you get out of the game, you need to have the knowledge and wisdom to make wise and smart decisions where you can be a blessing for other people and where you can go ahead and move on. You know,
somebody like you needs to be with each and every professional football team, because we hear so many and see so many kids go wrong. It seems like that sometimes they lose their focus on what they want to be, and they don't seem to be as structured as they should be. And there's got to be a tremendous amount of pressure on these kids. Johnson, that plays for the Titans, CJ, everybody's on him all the time. He got the big contract, and that always puts a target on your back. And then he had that great year before he signed his big contract. And then, since then, it seems like it's sporadic as far as his playing on the field. What gets into players' minds when all those things are going on?
First of all, let me say this. I never experienced what they experienced in way of dealing with big money. I've experienced dealing with, you could say, a large amount of money back when I was playing, because when I was playing, if you was in the six figures, that was good money back in the 70s, yeah. Almost like $1 million today. Money can very easily distort your priorities and your outlook on life. It's when I played the game, I would have played the game probably for what I received in a teaching salary. I would have played it for that amount because of the love of the game.
Even knowing you could be injured, your career gone the next
life. It wasn't about money, right. But it was about the level of competition. It was about the job. It was about I really enjoyed doing what I did. But at the same time, you know, money is important because of the fact that you realize that this is a short life. This you can't play this forever. You're only going to be here for 5 or 6 years, or maybe 7 or 8 at the most. And you have to try to get all the money while you can, because it's strictly business.
Right.
But you cannot get away from the fact that the love of the game. The love of the game is what really perfects the game. It's what make you commit yourself to the game. It's what make you try to get better each and every day. Each play, each day, you try to improve yourself. You try to perfect the art of playing football. And see, that love is what really, that's so important. Now, a lot of times, I think the money can kind of, you could say, affect one affection they have for the game. And when that come into play, then your security more or less rely upon the money that you're getting and the money that you have, and it does not rely upon the fact of being productive there day in and day out. There's big contracts that's given, and some guys, if they never play another day of football, you know, they're going to be wealthy for the rest of their life. So therefore, that causes some athletes to lose that motivation and drive if they don't have the love to play the game. And I've seen athletes where they've gotten big contracts and they fall by the wayside. I'm not necessarily saying this is the case with Johnson down there with the Titans. It's just maybe the fact that he just, you know, the Titans, they're having just a bad year. He got the open holes, you got the block for him in order for him to get the yardage, you know. But in some cases, this may be the deal, you know, where money can, you know, kind of take some of the competitive edge away. Instead of putting the competitive edge there, it can kind of take it away sometime.
I think from Washington, I think that's happened some. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Robert James.
Hey, neighbor, when you talk, others listen. If it's on Good Neighbor Talk, keep it here. WTNS, AM, FM, online. Live with breaking news. This is Talk Radio WGNS.
Right now the time, 9:29, the pilot of a single-engine plane that had a crash at the Murfreesboro Airport was indeed injured. The plane evidently hit a hangar and then ran off the runway and into a ditch around 8 o'clock this morning at the Murfreesboro Airport. The pilot became trapped in the cabin of the plane and had to be extricated out. The pilot was taken to Vanderbilt Medical Center via life flight helicopter just a little while ago. And the crash again occurred around 8 this morning. The plane was a Cessna 172 and is registered to a company in Connecticut. The Murfreesboro Fire Department is currently on the scene of that plane crash that occurred again at 8 this morning at the Murfreesboro Airport. Right now the time is 9:29. You're tuned to WGNS. Stay with us. A look at state news from Tennessee Radio Network comes your way in just 10 seconds.
The iShow with Brian Barrett is on weekday mornings, 5 to 6:30. The Morning News with Scott Walker, 6:30 to 7:50. Start your mornings with WGNS.
Tennessee Radio Network News, I'm Kristen Thoburn. United Airlines is adding nonstop flights from Nashville to Cleveland beginning December 19th. The flights will leave from Nashville International daily at 11:55 a.m. and 5:45 p.m. Airline officials say travelers currently have to catch a connection flight, but demand is high enough to warrant the addition of the nonstop flights. A new Vanderbilt University poll says a majority of Tennesseans favor a state-run health insurance exchange over one run by the federal government. Governor Haslam announced this week he would not set up a state-run exchange. A bathroom explosion resulted in some charges for a student.
A 17-year-old student from Antioch High School is facing charges for allegedly setting off a chemical reaction explosion in the school's bathroom Monday. Police say the teenager admitted to putting reactive chemicals into a plastic water bottle and placing it in the restroom.
TRN's Andrew Warren. As many as 1,000 jobs could be coming to Smyrna. Nissan announced yesterday it's opening a new battery plant adjacent to the existing vehicle assembly plant. The facility will be responsible for producing batteries for the Toyota Leaf. A Murfreesboro talent agent is facing charges for allegedly raping a 14-year-old client. Police say last year, 66-year-old Ron Hicks gave the young singer alcohol, then molested her after taking her to watch a band. Hicks is charged with rape, sexual battery by an authority figure, and sexual exploitation of a minor.
Wouldn't it be great if we were warned of life's risks?
It's a great day for fishing.
Yeah, but keep heading in that direction and you're gonna sink your boat.
If you have diabetes, an A1C test does just that. Warns if you should adjust your diabetes control to prevent organ damage. Find out more about the A1C test and the role it plays in reducing diabetes complications. Contact your local healthcare provider today and ask about the A1C test, funded through an agreement with the state of Tennessee.
Hi, I'm Brad Paisley. Years ago, my uncle was killed by a drunk driver. When about 3 in every 10 Americans will be involved in an alcohol-related crash in their lifetime, you begin to realize it isn't just a personal choice to drink and drive. You bring everyone on the road into that vehicle with you. Every child, every mother, every friend, every loved one. They're depending on you to keep them safe. Drive sober. Don't let them down. Call 1-800-GET-MAD or visit MAD.org. That's 1-800-GET-MADD or visit MAD.org.
This is Talk Radio WGNS.
Right now the time, 9:32. WGNS's Bart Walker is on the scene of that plane crash. What do you see out there?
Scott, we're here at the Murfreesboro Airport, and we've just spoken with some of the officials at the airport. This is a Cessna 172 owned by Murfreesboro Aviation. It appears that the accident occurred while the plane was taking off. This was last hour, just a short time ago, this past hour, in the 8 o'clock hour. Cessna 172 was taking off from the Murfreesboro Airport. Something went wrong. It's not clear what happened at this time, but the airplane is way off the runway, way off in a field here at the Murfreesboro Airport. The pilot was talking when they took him out of the plane, but he has been taken by life flight helicopter to the trauma center at Vanderbilt Medical Center. Another unit from the Murfreesboro Fire Department is just coming in to hear, so they are making sure that there's no fire. We don't have any reports of that at this time. While the investigators are making sure that everything is checked in and everything, they're trying to get all of the information. We are here at the Murfreesboro Airport. At this time, no additional information has been released, but the pilot has been taken to Vanderbilt's trauma center via life flight helicopter. We understand that when he was taken out of the plane, there was a period of time that he was trapped in the plane. When he was taken out of the plane, he was talking. It's not clear as to what caused this accident. It was during takeoff, and this was the last hour, just a little over an hour ago. We'll be here to get more information for you as soon as it's available. You'll hear about it on WGNS, and we will have some photographs on our website about the accident, too. Back to you, Scott.
Thanks a lot. Right now the time, 9:34. You're tuned to WGNS. Stay with us. Truman Jones coming your way in just a minute.
The Outpost Armory is not just another gun store. Our staff has hands-on knowledge and experience with firearms, self-defense training, hunting, and competitive shooting. We cater to the new gun owner and the expert looking for that hard-to-find product. We carry items that the big chain stores don't and have bulk ammunition for the high-volume shooter. We defend the Second Amendment and help responsible citizens protect their families, rights, and liberties. Visit us in person or online at theoutpostarmory.com. The Outpost Armory, I-24 East at exit 89 in Murfreesboro.
So, here you go.
Are we exchanging gifts this year?
I don't know. Guess I had a weak moment. Happy holidays.
Oh, well, thanks, bro, but I didn't get you anything.
Oh, that's okay. You're going to have to take that back anyway.
What do you mean? Like, to the store?
Oh, yeah, that's definitely a return.
Lottery ticket. Thanks.
Check it out.
Whoa, this is a winner. Dude, this is a big winner.
Hey, just taking care of my little brother.
This year, you too can be a winner. Give the gift of game-changing fun. Happy holidays from the Tennessee Lottery.
It's really not much. It's nothing,
oh,
really.
Oh, hush. I'm sure I'm going to love it.
No, really. It's just a little something.
It's a candle.
Yeah, it's pine forest, I think.
Wait, is this the candle you got last year?
I don't think it's the same one.
This is. It's the candle your brother
made
you.
It might be the same kind of candle.
Give the gift that won't be regifted. Instant games from the Tennessee Lottery. Play Season's Gold and Trim the Tree, just to name a few. The Tennessee Lottery. Game-changing fun.
Could have gotten you a sweater.
Hi, I'm Nelson Mercado, pastor of the Murfreesboro Seventh-day Adventist Church. Have you been wondering what will happen on December 21st, 2012? Will the world as we know it come to an end? But what does the Bible say about the end of the world? Let's find out together. Join us on Friday, December 21st at 7 p.m. and on Saturday, December 22nd at 11 a.m. and 7 p.m. Our church is located at 2815 Elam Road in Murfreesboro. God bless you, and I hope to see you there.
Wondering what to do tonight, where to eat, what movie to watch? Check your pulse at BurrowPulse.com or at any of the 600 drop-off locations in Rutherford County. The Murfreesboro Pulse, Rutherford County's source for art, entertainment, and culture news.
That update brought to you by Ryan's. At Ryan's, remember you can turn every Thursday night into a family night. So next Thursday, every Thursday between 5 and 8 o'clock, kids eat for just 99 cents with the purchase of an adult meal. That's only at Ryan's on Thursdays.
The Truman Show now continues on the voice of Rutherford County, WGNS, AM and FM.
The best place in the future.
All right, welcome back with Robert James. And, of course, we've got a lot of subjects we can cover. But one of the things that we were talking about, of course, was pro football. And I know that Robert was a pro bowler a number of times, I think three times. And I got to see you play. Of course, it was always fun to see somebody from Murfreesboro up there succeeding and representing the community. And we have somebody on the line right now, Robert, to talk to us. So we have to put our ears on. And caller, welcome aboard with Robert James.
Thank you for taking my call. I was just wanting to tell Robert how much I enjoyed watching him play as a pro football player. And he's a much better person than a football player, if that tells you anything, what a great person he is. And I'm sure bringing down Larry Zonka in zero freezing degree weather in Rich Stadium, I'm sure that was a lot of fun. And if that wasn't enough fun, trying to chase Paul Warfield or Jim Kick, Mercury Morris, the reigning Super Bowl champions, and I'm sure that was just a lot of fun. But also, not only what a great football player he was, his counterpart, Tony Green, I remember him when he played and what a great career he had. But I was going to ask him, if he remembered this play, it was on Monday night, and Joe Ferguson was the quarterback. And, you know, you have so many different personalities in pro football, high tempers and even kill and a lot of different personalities. Joe Ferguson threw a pass, and the guy, I think it was New England Patriots linebacker, maybe it was on Monday night, and what's his name, came in and took his helmet off on the sidelines and just started going, just using his fist on his head. And I thought that was kind of entertaining. And, of course, pro football is entertaining. But I just wanted to know if he remembered that play and how much I enjoyed watching him play as a pro a football player. And I'll get off the air and listen. And thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
I can't quite recall that play, but Joe Ferguson, they called him the Arkansas Rifle, exceptional player, but I can't really recall that particular play. Really, if I wasn't on the field, I was on the bench getting my rest, getting ready to go back in, so I could have missed that, you know.
What about hitting Zonka?
Well,
he was a big guy.
I had a couple opportunities to tackle Zonker, and I remember one opportunity in particular. It was in Buffalo, and we were down on the goal line. It was 4th and 1, and they decided to go for it, and they gave the ball to Zonker. I met Zonker on the other side of the line of scrimmage and stopped him. Did not get the 1 yard, but the key to stopping somebody as big and as powerful as Zonker is to get to them before they start getting any force up. So the reason I was able to stop him is because I was able to get to him before he took 2 or 3 steps. Otherwise, if you let someone that big and that powerful get their momentum, he's like a train, and he will run over you, and he could run over you because he's one of the best fullbacks that ever played the game. But fortunate enough, I think they could have had me on a blitz of my key. After reading your keys, and you have keys to read, that it can free you to go ahead and just blitz and get across the line of the scrimmage and stop someone like Zonker before they really get started, because he was very powerful.
You did better than Bill Bates did against Herschel Walker, didn't you? Well, we've got another caller on the line, Robert, and caller, welcome aboard.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
Just wanted to thank your guests, Robert, for using a word earlier, humility. I wish they could instill that into every professional sports player. It's so, the word I'm looking for, not disappointing, but to hear all these guys arguing over the lockouts, this and that. It is about money. You know, the word humility, you got people starving, and they're more concerned, the owners and the players, about how much more money they can make. I just find it a little ridiculous. I wish that he could instill the word humility into every professional sports player so they can realize it's just not about the money. And then the education, true, is huge. You could name us several people right now. Look at Vince Young. Nothing to show for his time during the NFL and has nowhere to go. So I appreciate you being on the show and using that word humility. I try to be that way myself, so I'll get off and listen.
Thank you very much. You and I were talking about something interesting, I guess, when we're off the air. We were talking about when you play football and you play for the love of game, you really have, as you said, two personas. You have the Robert James off the field, who is your kind of like your normal self. You're humble. You're an intelligent man. You're one of these people that you're able to look at life in a logical way. And then you have the Robert James who gets on the football field, and all of a sudden something clicks, and there you are in the middle of a battle. Football players are warriors. They're out there. If you didn't love the game, you wouldn't be out there. Mm-hmm. You know, there's too many things that can happen.
Well, yeah. Football players have to have split personalities. Mm-hmm. The problem with some of them is just that when they don't know where to leave one personality at, you know.
They blend them.
And you definitely don't want to blend them. And you don't want to take the personality that you have on the football field. You don't want to take it out in society because there's no place for it out in society. But there on the football field, you have to be extremely highly competitive. You have to be very focused because really at that level, the intensity at that level is different than any other level of sports that you may be involved in on the high school or the college level. It's got to be something you have to just kind of bean in on, and you just have to just be so focused that you have to be aware of everything that's going on around you, but you have to be unaware. And what I mean by that, you can be in the stadium of 100,000 people, you can be on national TV, and especially if you play cornerback where you're one-on-one, if you make a mistake, the whole world is going to see you. But you have to be so focused in on what you're doing, you can't be paying attention to where you're at and what's going on around you because of the level of responsibility that you're faced with. And you have to be very aggressive, too, because football is a very balanced sport. It's rough, combative-type sport. And in order to survive and to be successful at that level, you have to rise to the occasion. But at the same time, you know, when you walk off the field, there are some qualities, I think, that you must display and you don't need to bring them with you because there's no place for them in society. And one thing you cannot allow people to do, you can't try to live up to that reputation and have people to put you up on a pedestal. Once you're off the football field, because people will do that, they will elevate you and they will, blow smoke into your ego and to puff you up. But you always have to know who you are, and that's the fact that you're just a mere man. And you're just the same as any other person. It's just that God has given you a special gift. You play, you're involved in an unusual occupation, but at the same time, you're no different than anybody else. But see, sometimes football players make the mistake and they feel like they may be in a different world, a different class, and maybe a little different. But the bottom line, you know, God is not a respecter of man, and you should have that same view about yourself, that you know that you're just mere man, and you just need to just be humble, do what you have to do, be polite, be kind, be respectful, be gentle, but also be wise.
Don't you think it's hard on these young athletes today, starting at the high school level and going all the way up to the pro level? They are put on a pedestal. I mean, everybody's telling them how great they are and what they mean and all of that. Does it sometimes, do they lose a sense of reality? Because now it seems like not just football, it's basketball and baseball. It seems like that they want the attention focused on them. It's just like they can't get enough of it. It's almost like a high. And then, As things go, they've become more of entertainers than, say, baseball players or football players or basketball players. They almost rise above the level of that. Mm-hmm. And then we have seen so many failures over the years of people. And it's almost like there's people out there wanting to use those people to get what they can get from them. And then they seem to lose themselves in the process.
Well, yes, you can make that mistake and lose, and you have a distorted view of yourself concerning your self-identity and not knowing who you actually may be. I think as long as you can keep your feet anchored and not allow your head to swell and become inflated and float you, you can do well in society and whatever you may decide to do. But this is what society has done.
Yes.
Once a young person gets involved in professional sports, they're considered as a celebrity sometime. And in a lot of cases, they let that status affect them in way of how they deal with other people and how they view themselves. And that can be a great hindrance to a person. When they lose that, you could say, insight and foresight of who they are, and that's dangerous. And that happened to some young people, and that's because mainly of a lack of experience, not knowing how to handle the exposure that they get from, you could say, obtaining that particular status, and maybe the financial resources that they're blessed with, and it can be more of a hindrance than a help.
I think the first one I remember kind of reaching that status was Joe Namath, and they kind of put him up in the celebrity status when he was playing for the New York Jets when they won that first one.
Yeah, but you know, one thing about Joe, they put him there, but Joe have always been Joe, you know, on the TV and on the football field.
Broadway,
you know,
Joe.
He's always been Joe. Have not changed. I think today he's still the same. And yes, he was rather cocky, but he backed up, you know, the promise that he made when the AFC won the first Super Bowl. Mm-hmm. But behind that, you know, he's always been, from my understanding, from my observation, a level-headed person. To some degree, there's some gentleness and meekness behind that, personality that he displayed out there on the football field.
Well, we've got another caller on the line.
They hung up.
Oh, they did? Oh.
You know, we was talking about earlier about the status of athletes. Uh-huh. When I was went back to Buffalo several years ago, I was talking with Ralph Wilson, the owner up there, and he made a statement, and it really stuck with me throughout the years. He told me, he said, Robert, he said, when you was playing for me, I had players. Mm-hmm. He said, today I don't have players, I have partners. And see, and I think that kind of can go back to, you could say, the attitude that people have towards the game. Mm-hmm. You know, when I played, I was a football player. Mm-hmm. Football guys up there now, they're partners with management up there. So maybe their outlook on the game is a little different than the outlook that we had on the game. So I think that's some difference in how players look at the game today and how they looked at the game yesterday. But I don't fault these guys for their status that they have. Matter of fact, I support them because the money has always been there in football for the guys to be compensated, and they need to be compensated because football is a very dangerous and a very risky sport. You can get hurt and never play another down in your life. So you need to get all you can get while you can get it, because if you don't get it, the money is going to be there, and the money will end up in management hand and not in the hands of the people who really deserve the money, which are the football players who put in their health on the line.
You know, every position seems to have a monetary value. You go from the quarterback and all the way around. And was it always the fact that did they pay, say, for a defensive back or a cornerback? Mm-hmm. Were you on the same financial level as, say, the running backs, the wide receivers? Because you had wide receiver speed. But at this day and time, it seems like the ones that really stand out are on defense, the ones that can cover their area. They can deliver a lick. You know, there's some players out there that they have the speed, they can cover the pass coverages, but they don't like to hit. You can see that. I mean,
I think it depends on your individual stock, and not necessarily position, you know. It's your level of performance at the position that you're at. If you're exceptional, you can get top dollar anywhere as a lineman, as a linebacker, as a defensive back, wide out, quarterback, running back, any position. You know, if you're an exceptional, you can get an exceptional salary, but it depends on your individual stock.
Now, you're still in pretty good shape. Could I be your agent and represent you? I think I could handle 10%
well,
for you.
Well, you know, if we could play the sport in our mind, I probably could make some money.
All right. We have another caller on the line. Caller, welcome aboard with Robert James.
Good morning to Truman and Robert. This is Ennis Stan. And I don't talk football. I leave that to the other guys. But I do want to thank. I still call him Coach James. I'm sorry. He wears many hats, but he's always going to be a coach. But I just thank him. He's just such an encouragement to my children. And my daughter now realized that he tried to encourage her to run track, which she would have been good at. And he was just so helpful, but she didn't pursue that. But that's all right. But I think my son sort of took some of the things from him because he was a wide receiver at Riverdale. Playing football, but he loves all sports, and he's into teaching now. But I just thank him for all the things that he's encouraged them to do, and he's still encouraging to a lot of young people. So keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Okay.
You know, that's pretty valuable.
Yes, you mentioned I wear many different hats. For the last 10 years, I've been wearing a pastor's hat. I pastor at St. John United Methodist Church. This is another season that God has taken me in. I look back in my life, and I look back when I graduated from Fisher University. I played. I was in the NFL for 8 years up until I got hurt. That was one season. From that season, he took me into education, and I was in education about 33, 34 years, and most of that time was spent at Riverdale High School. I started at Smyrna with Bud Rakes down there, one of the greatest principals, I think, that has been through Rutherford County. And then from the educational career, God has really, he's moved me into another season of ministry. And the last 10 years, I've been pastoring at St. John, which is I thoroughly appreciate and enjoy and thank God for the privilege and opportunity to allow me to do this, because I feel it was a calling on my life early in my life, because when I was playing professional football, I was a team chaplain. So Sunday morning before we walked out there on the field and played ball, we had worship service. Yeah, so professional football players, they do go to church, okay? It's on Sunday. And I was responsible for getting speakers in, or either at maybe a time or two speaking to the team myself. And God's calling was upon me then. I did not really receive it the way I should have received it, but God was very patient with me, and later in my life he did allow me to come into the ministry, and I've been there 10 years, and it's really been a blessing.
You know, you really have had a wonderful life, as the old movie says. I mean, you've excelled everywhere that you've been, and a lot of it is basically how you look at life. I mean, you look at it in such a way that you've been thankful for all the skills that you've been given, all the opportunities, of course, a lot of the opportunities you made for yourself. But you've been able to share that with a lot of young people here in the community, and to have reached the status that you did through all the hardships, and yet still maintain that humble disposition that you have, has to somehow wear on a lot of the young people that you come in contact with. And it, you know, it's a shame that we don't have more people like you that can become the role models for those people.
Well, you know, regardless what occupation you may be in, I think all of us are servants. And as we come this way in life, if we can't help somebody and we can't be a positive influence in somebody's life and making their life better, then I think, you know, if that's not our yardstick that we measure ourselves by, then I think we've lived our life in vain. Regardless what your occupation may be, I feel like that all of us are ministers. And when I was in high school as an administrator, the kids that I came involved with, I looked at that as a ministry because it was an opportunity to help mold and shape young people's lives. And I think all teachers, you know, hopefully have that same perspective as they look at life. And I think even in your past occupation, which was, you know, a rather rough and tough occupation of law enforcement, but it was a necessity, and actually it was a ministry.
It was.
You know, and I felt like you served the public. You know, it was in many different ways, and you contributed to, you could say, society in a very positive manner. And I think all of us, that should be our outlook in life, to contribute to society in a positive manner and to help someone along the way.
You have to love people. And if you don't have that heart and feeling for others, it must be a cold, cold world.
Well,
have to go through.
You know, people, we're one of the natural inborn instincts with us is to interact. It's, I think, to be love and to love. That can be done in many, many different ways. And it's important, I think, that while we're involved in our day-to-day activity, as we're interacting with people, we can have a very selfish attitude and a selfish outlook on life, and not understand the fact that we live in a world where we're surrounded with people that we have to interact with, and we need to have a positive input, influence on people that we're coming in contact with from day to day.
You know, in this day where the kids do not have as much input from their parents as they used to when we were all young, the teacher's responsibility has grown tremendously, but yet in some respects in the last 5 or 6 years, they've kind of cookie-cuttered how you work in the classroom and how you work in the schools as it relates to kids. Do you think losing that ability to communicate from the teachers to the students, are we losing more than what we're really gaining? Because you, myself, everybody has been influenced by people in the classroom. Mm-hmm. From the time we started in first grade for me all the way through, there's always been people there to give me the right direction, mm-hmm. and not just with academics.
Mm-hmm. You know, one thing about teachers, you know, I think 90% of the teachers, they're in the business because they love kids. Mm-hmm. And when you love kids, you're going to find a way to teach them to have a positive impact on their lives, to influence them in the right way, to have a desire to see them to grow and develop and be productive young people in lives because you love them.
Right.
I think as we talk about teachers, one element that's always, that's very easily overlooked is the love and the desire that teachers have for their jobs. Mm-hmm. And most of the time, when you leave teachers alone and let them teach, they will do an excellent job. I think over the past couple of years, there's been a lot of intervention where a lot of restrictions has been placed on them. A lot of additional paperwork is probably being required of them. And everybody is trying to get involved, you could say, in trying to improve education to the point where it possibly has may have become a hindrance to some degree in the classroom. I think the intention is good, mm-hmm. but the bottom line, sometime I think you just have to just tell teachers what you need, prepare them, and give them an opportunity to go ahead and just to teach. Structure is necessary. Structure is necessary in anything that we do, mm-hmm. but that's a balance, and I think this is what you have to look at sometime. You can get teachers so wrapped up in the paperwork, the requirements that you're putting on them there in the classroom, the many, many different things that have to do within a one class period, the level of expectation, you can make them so paranoid sometime, you know, they can lose sight of the fact of the individuality of the students that they're required to, you could say, to help there and to educate there.
We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with Robert James.
This is Josh at South Branch Nursery, your full-service, one-stop garden center open to everyone. We have 10.5 acres of combined plant material, mulches, landscape stone, and lawn decor. With fall here and winter around the corner, now is the best time to plant most trees and shrubs. We're here all winter for your landscaping needs. This is Josh inviting you to come visit our South Church Street location just off I-24 past Indian Hills Golf Course. Visit us online at southbranchnursery.com or find us on Facebook.
Hi, I'm Dr. Patrick Showalter.
And I'm Dr. Chad Jackson. Did you know that Middle Tennessee Medical Center is home to the Da Vinci surgical robot and that we are the first surgeons to use the robot in Rutherford County?
When faced with prostate cancer, the Da Vinci robot makes surgery an excellent option.
It allows for quicker recovery, less blood loss, and studies suggest it may be the most effective, least invasive treatment option for improving cancer outcomes.
For more information or to find a Da Vinci robot certified physician, visit mtmc.org.
If you want to get some barbecue, I tell you how to do it. Head for the Slick Pig and you're into it. Just walk through the door at 1920 East Main and your nose will send a message right to your brain.
Now at Slick Pig Barbecue, try the Catfish Special. Wednesday night between 4 and 8 o'clock, $9.99 plus tax for all-you-can-eat catfish. The meal includes hush puppies, white beans, and homemade coleslaw at Slick Pig Barbecue.
Looking for a really smart gift for your child or grandchild this holiday? Something that won't break or need batteries? Try the Tennessee Department of Treasury's new Tennessee Stars College Savings 529 program. If you open a Tennessee Stars account with at least $50 by December 31st, 2012, you get a one-time $50 match from the state. Roll over your entire balance from another college savings plan and receive $100 in your Tennessee Stars account. To learn about the Tennessee Stars College Savings 529 program, its investment objectives, risks, and costs, read the official statement available at www.tnstars.com or call toll-free 855-386-7827. Check with your home state to learn if it offers tax or other benefits for investing in its own 529 plan. Tennessee Stars is the holiday gift that keeps on giving for a lifetime. Visit www.tnstars.com or call toll-free 855-386-7827 and open your account today.
WeatherEye. Mainly sunny skies will continue in our forecast this afternoon. Expect a mild high temperature in the middle 50s. And we'll have clear conditions tonight with lows dropping down to 33. I'm WGNS meteorologist Sam Donaisky. Right now it's 36.
So, what if you're walking out to your car after work and it's been mashed by a runaway garbage truck? We've got an agent for that. Having your own State Farm agent means having a real person there to help you when things go wrong. So when accidents happen, you've got someone you know who will be there when you need them. I'm Jeannie Allman, and I'm that State Farm agent.
Get to a better state, State Farm.
I'm State Farm agent Jeannie Allman at 896-2013.
And welcome back with Robert James. We want to let you know that this part of his show is brought to you by Murfreesboro Automotive. When you need car repairs, you want someone you can trust. Murfreesboro Automotive is that place. Chuck Haynes is a staff of certified technicians that can fix anything. From the simple oil change to major auto repair, Murfreesboro Automotive is the only place you need. Murfreesboro Automotive, turned off broad between Chewy's and Chili's. on to Ridgely Road. There's one question I was going to ask you, and I asked you a little bit before we came back on the air. When you first went to Buffalo, that's always been one of the more fascinating things to me, is when a great college player goes up into the professional community at Buffalo. How was it when you first got up there? And you're giving a little bit of it to me.
When I had an opportunity to get on the football field, I was in awe. Simply because leaving a small college where, you know, if we had 4,000 or 5,000 people at our game, you know, we would consider that as a sellout. And then, you know, going into a stadium that possibly could hold maybe 40,000 or 50,000 people, and playing in front of that type of crowd, playing on national TV when you've never been on TV, it was a huge adjustment. Plus, Buffalo, a city that really, really loved their football players up there, because it was really the only show in town back mm-hmm. then. They didn't have a professional baseball team. They didn't have a professional basketball team. The professional football team was really the only professional team there. And the fans up there are some of the greatest fans in the world, and they really supported the football players, and they recognized the football players. And it was kind of a different atmosphere, moving into that type of atmosphere and the status that was placed upon you. It was a little different, but once again, you know, you always know who you are and where you come from.
It's not a place you'd want to live, is it?
During football season, and then after football season, if you don't like bad weather, you need to get away from Buffalo. Because once it snows, they told me you don't see the ground anymore into spring, and that's probably over in April, and which is true. You know, we've gotten some snow up there. We played one football game, and I never will forget this. We played against the Cincinnati Bengals up there, and it was snowing. This was probably in November. And when we got to the stadium, probably had about a foot of snow on the tarp. They had still had the tarp on the field, and they had to take the tarp off the field probably about an hour before the game. And that was 12 o'clock. Kickoff was at 1 o'clock. And when they took the tarp off the field at between 12 and 1, another foot of snow fell on the field. So when we walked out there, you couldn't see anything except a white stadium out there. I looked up in the stadium. It looked like maybe 5 or 6 people up there. And I was wondering why they was at the game, because it was a blizzard, really. And I wouldn't have been there unless they were just paying me. And I had to be there. It's the type of place that you don't want to be. It can very easily get to 40, 45, 50 below zero up there. And I couldn't figure out when I was up there, riding down the street, I saw all these extension cords running from people's houses to their car. And I asked one of the guys, I said, why all these extension cords running to people's car? They said they had to keep them warm, otherwise the batteries freeze up overnight and the car won't start. We don't have to do this in the South. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't see people running extension cords from the house to the car. But, you know, that was, you know, I mean, that's quite unusual. It just actually get that cold up there where your car won't even start, you know.
You're freezing up there. Here you are playing defensive back, and you got to go up and hit a 235, 240-pound runner, and it's 25 or 30. Do you ever say, oh, my goodness, I'm frozen here. I got to go in and hit this big guy.
Well, you know, the advantage you have is that when you go up there in July, mm-hmm. The body get used to that type of weather. Mm-hmm. Now, if you just come up there to play football in November and you come from Florida or come from California, mm-hmm. it's a shock to the body.
Yeah.
But if you've been there all along, the body get adjusted to it, because we go out and we practice in it every day, and mentally you get prepared for it and you get used to it. But really, you don't ever get used to it. We was playing a game up there, and I got cold and didn't really know not to stand over next to the heater over there. So we came off the field, and I got over next to the heater, and I was getting warm, and they hollered for the defense back on the field, and I had to run back out on the field. And I didn't realize that the worst thing you can do is to get warm, leave an environment where it's about 75 degrees, and go into an environment where it's zero. And when I got on the field, my body started shaking and I started convulsing,
and
I couldn't stop. And the linebacker he looked at me. Another guy turned around and looked at me, and I was shaking, and I couldn't stop. And he said, I know what's wrong with you. You've been over there by that heat. You got to stay away from the heat. So so when you're in a cold environment, you cannot allow yourself to get too warm. Otherwise, it can cause some very serious problems.
Robert, it's been really, really fun. This hour went way too quick. I'll have to have you back on because there's a lot of things I want to talk to you about. But it has been so enjoyable for me this morning, and I know it has been for the listeners too. And I want to thank you as much for being with our children in the school system and being the great role model that you've been over all these years and all the things that you have taught them to make their lives more successful.
Well, I appreciate it, and thank you for the opportunity for me to share some of the past experiences that I've had in my past. And once again, it was truly a blessing to have an opportunity to work in the Rutherford County school system with the kids to have an impact on their life.
Thank you very much. Promise to come back.
I will.
Okay.
Thank you.
See you in the morning. 9 o'clock.